This is the FS Tech Podcast.
Hello and welcome to this FS Tech Podcast. I'm Isaac Hansen, Senior Reporter at FS Tech. On the 11th of March, Revolut was granted a full UK banking licence after a four-year process. Co-founder and Chief Executive of Revolut, Nick Storonski, described the decision as the culmination of a long-term strategic priority. This is not its first banking licence globally. It attained status in the EU 5 years ago and launched full banking operations in Mexico in January of this year. But the UK is Revolut's home market, and the licence should help to quell long-standing concerns over issues including delayed account filings. It now joins the ranks of competitor neobanks like Monzo and Starling in being able to offer loans backed by customer deposits, but the $75 billion fintech has not yet announced plans to offer them in the UK. This raises a key question. If Revolut could already offer lending without a UK banking licence, why go through the long and complex process of becoming a fully regulated bank? Have changes in the market, company strategy, or regulatory expectations made this move necessary? And what will it mean for Revolut's flexibility, costs, and competitive position going forward? We'll explore these issues today with Christoph Stegmeier, a senior partner in consultancy Simon Kucher's global banking practice with over 20 years of experience in financial services. Christoph, thank you for joining me. To start us off with some scene setting, let's look at the process behind Revolut's UK banking license. Why did the process take so long? Was it regulatory concerns, internal readiness, or shifting expectations from regulators?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me. Obviously, an exciting topic for everyone that's following the neobanking landscape. Let me sort of explore that in the next couple of minutes. So it's taken a long time for getting the license, but then it's also a process that, if you think back for many, many years, banks did not file for new banking licenses anymore. So I remember the times in the 2010 to 2020, there were news around sort of the first license being granted in decades in the UK and other markets. So it's not necessarily a process that was a standard process. Now, Revolut, obviously, over the course of time, while they did apply for the license, now Revolut is a completely different bank than it was, I think, when they started in 2021. So back then, I do remember we ran a study at Simon Kucher for 2022 around the neobanks globally. The big message there was really no one is profitable. I think it was less than 5% of the neobanks that were profitable. It was a model that wasn't proven. It was certainly being received with a lot of skepticism from the regulators. Nowadays, neobanks are the fastest growing banks globally. Revolut and Nubank, I think, are the two largest or fastest growing banks globally. So we're now dealing with an elephant, not a tiny ant anymore that's running and trying to make their cause. So I think that's part of it, because Revolut has moved so quickly. Obviously, that regulatory process also had to shift over time. And then secondly, what I mentioned before, it's just nothing where the regulator has had a lot of experience. Yes, there's Monzo, there's Starling, but it's just a relatively new process. Hence, it took longer than expected.
Sure, yeah. And what was it, in your opinion, that finally tipped the scales into granting the license after, as you say, a really quite lengthy process?
Look, it's always hard to be speaking for the regulator and what took so long. I think there is now a lot of pressure on regulators globally also of that model that has already reached millions and millions of customers of making their business a regulated one. Ultimately, there's always a risk involved for the regulator granting a license. But in that particular case, if you have, it's hard to keep track of, but if you're at 50 million customers globally, then obviously having a sound regulatory approval is also an important sign for the end customer. So I think there's pressure on the regulator, and I think it's just a natural process. It already took longer than it should have taken. to get to a decision eventually. As you mentioned before, it's not the first license that Revolut was granted. They had their Lithuanian license for quite some time. They have other licenses in other parts of the world. More will follow. But at a certain stage, I think you would, as a UK regulator, if you don't give that license, you're probably the odd one out. While at the beginning, it was a bit the other way around, right? Who would give a neobank a license? Now it's more of a standard procedure, I think. So it was about time to do that.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think that point you were making earlier about how sort of standard neobanking has become and how large these neobanks have become is really at the heart of the discussion that we're having today. I mean, opinions have differed, I think, on whether actually getting a banking license is positive for Revolut, right? I mean, Barclays chief executive, Venkatakrishnan, has previously told the Financial Times that Revolut benefited from operating without a full license, due to the sort of lower level of regulatory scrutiny that it faced. But obviously, Stronsky disagrees, and Revolut as a company so clearly disagrees. So, I mean, you talked about customer trust. I mean, was this move necessary for longer term expansion in the UK? And does it risk diluting the sort of original agility that gave Revolut an edge over high street banks?
I'd like to answer that in two parts. That's really, really two important elements. Let's maybe start with the latter one, the agility point. What one has to understand whether or not a company is agile, and for lack of a better term, but let's stick to the agile term here, is not so much a question of whether you're regulated or not. It's a DNA thing. We work, and then I personally work a lot with both fintechs and neobanks, but on the other side, also large financial institutions. There's a very different way of doing things. There's a very different way of launching new products, of testing new products. The big portion of agility really comes in the way of how quickly a Revolut can find the ideas, bring the ideas into motion, have a tech team that's actually building this. Obviously, a lot of the tech is built in-house at Revolut versus in large institutions it is not. And then have a time to market that's probably closer to 6 to 12 months for really large ideas versus in large institution that goes into the multiple years if you want to launch a big initiative. That type of agility, I don't see a reason why having a license should impact that type of agility. Of course, when you're dealing with certain products, when you're dealing with KYC, AML, and so on processes, you have more scrutiny and you have to probably do maybe one extra loop in that, but it doesn't change the DNA. So while it has some impact, my view is it's not gonna change dramatically the agility that a Revolut should have. First part of your question, or now second part, is around whether or not that was actually needed. I think it depends on how you define needed. Obviously, Revolut was doing quite well. They announced their annual report just very, very recently. And what you see is a huge jump in profitability, is a huge jump in revenues. Obviously, in multiple countries, they do have a license, so they benefit from that. But even without a license, I think it's important to understand the economics of Revolut, which is very different than the economics of most neobanks. Revolut today is a commission or fee-based led model where I think interest income is somewhere between 20 to 25% of the entire income. The industry on neobanking usually is already at 60, 70, sometimes even 80% of interest income. I don't think, maybe with the exception of Wise, that has an FX-led business and therefore also commission-led business model, there is a clear lookalike to Revolut around making revenues in the range of 4, 5, 6 billion of dollars or pounds, and having a percentage of commission fee income that's in the range of 70 to 80%. That's just Revolut. Now, and that kind of then spins, well, do they have to get a license? Well, it's just a huge opportunity because they're currently, you can say they're overpenetrated on commission fee income, or you could say they're underpenetrated on net interest income. And what the license will do is it'll just make life much easier around growing deposits, around selling loans, building a balance sheet, and managing the profitability of that balance sheet. And that's why I think necessary, probably not, but is it a big opportunity? Probably yes.
Sure, yeah. And I mean, I guess more broadly, as you say, I mean, other neobanks maybe look even more like your high street bank in terms of their income spread. And, they're getting up to customer numbers that are very similar. I mean, Revolut has just over 13 million UK customers at the time of recording, which puts it just behind Nationwide. So it's in the sort of top 10, easily probably top five or six largest banks in terms of customers. It does have lower deposits, as you said. These banks are starting to look, these neo banks, as we call them, are starting to look increasingly similar to their brick and mortar cousins. What's driving that convergence? And does the banking license further reduce the differentiation of neo banks from sort of their older, more established counterparts?
It's probably worth sort of going back in time for when the neobanks launched initially. What was the promise of the neobanks? It was mostly we'll do, many said we're not a bank. We want to do things differently. We want to have better UX. I think the initial idea was for most of the neobanks, make money out of a better transaction account. Interchange fees was a big part of the play for many neobanks. On purpose, they stayed away from building a balance sheet. Not everyone, but at least in the UK and continental Europe, that was the big play. Part of it was driven by most of these neobanks being owned and funded by VCs. VCs, what they don't like is volatility. What they don't like necessarily is a big balance sheet. What they do like is recurring revenues. Hence, most of the neobanks went in with a mindset, let's create recurring revenues, let's stay away as much as we can from interest revenues. What happened is that over the course of the first 5, 6, 7 years of neobanks, many of them were not profitable. The reason being, it turned out that very, very few were able to make enough money out of commission income in order to grow profitably. It was not difficult to grow. It was much more difficult to grow profitably. So fast forward to today, there has been a change in the mindset in the industry that actually interest income is, well, might not be as positive seen as commission income, but it's still profitability. And most neobanks need that element for profitability. So I think that's sort of where we've seen that big shift in mindset, and that's where we've seen essentially also it's just the consequence of why Revolut is now sort of taking the license and will probably do the next step then and then getting a bit closer to being a traditional bank from a product mindset. Now, again, second part of the answer here is what is being offered might be similar. How it is being offered will still differ significantly. And we might talk a bit about the new bets framework of Revolut that has been a lot has been written about it, of how Revolut is able to generate new ideas and bring them to market quickly. Obviously, there's a lot, I think they call it banking and beyond, if my memory serves me well.
They
So
do, yeah.
it is certainly more than the traditional banks, but it is grounded in the traditional set of financial products. You take money, you lend it out at a higher rate, you offer investments, you offer payments and transactions. That's what a bank is all about. That's where the core is. I think yes, the core is the same, but how it's being offered, how innovation is coming into play, the UX of it, all those things are still dramatically different. So I wouldn't call it I wouldn't call it converging. I would just say the foundation remains a bank. Everything else is still quite different.
I think it's very interesting that you talk about how things are offered, and obviously there is a large difference. One thing that I'm particularly interested in is the UK's ring fencing laws. Revolut, as you say in their most recent earnings report, say that they now have over £50 billion in customer balances. It doesn't break these down by country, but it must at least put them relatively close to the £25 billion retail deposit limit in the UK that would require them to ring fence their retail activities. If it is required to do so, and presumably we have to assume that they intend to get to that number sooner rather than later, what does that mean for the and more part of its banking operations?
So I don't have data either around the geographical split of deposits. I think based on the restricted license that Revolut had in the UK and the limits they had on a customer level around the level of deposits they were able to gather, that's probably right. And maybe they're still a bit away from that boundary. I think there is an important part here in terms of deposit gathering that is linked to Revolut's push for being more a bank for affluent or even private banking customers. That's obviously been public for a while now around Revolut trying to build a muscle in that space. I'll bring some data here that's probably interesting to observe. So globally, and the UK is very similar to that, but globally, we've seen that around 2 out of 5 new bank accounts are being opened now in neobanks. So roughly 40% of the acquisition share. Revolut just announced that their numbers in some of the countries they claim about 1 out of 3 new accounts being opened being a Revolut account. So pretty similar data than the one that we were able to gather. At the same time, we've looked into the total retail banking revenues globally, and it's only about 5% sit with neobanks, which means neobanks have been very successful in acquiring. They're quite successful in keeping and growing customers, but they haven't yet been able to tap into some of the largest revenue pools of retail banking. Where do they sit? Well, they sit with mortgages, they sit with private banking, affluent relationships. That's what is so important also around having a banking license, having no limits around the level of deposits that you can gather. So you can in a market like UK, my gut feel is that these two things are very much related around pushing more into the private banking space. And the affluent space while having a license which will facilitate that process significantly.
Sure. Okay. So you think that in some ways the ring fencing will actually benefit them on the business model that they're intending to pursue in the UK?
I presume so. It's a bit harder sort of to understand exactly sort of what's going on behind in the minds here, but I would think so, yes.
Sure, absolutely. To jump across the pond for a minute, obviously you're based in the US, and Revolut has also applied for a US banking license this month. Now, in your neobanking report, you detail a fragmented market for neobanks in the United States, with many homegrown providers facing a long path to profitability, certainly compared to Europe. Will Revolut's acquisition of a UK banking license help its prospects as it moves over into the US, or does it actually expose them to sort of similar structural challenges that the incumbents in the US already face?
First of all, I'm shying away from predicting the outcome of regulatory processes. That's obviously you never know what's gonna come out of those. But there's obviously a precedent of Nubank having successfully applied for a charter in the U.S. There is a neobank in the U.S. with a charter, which is Varo Bank. So there have been some successful cases. It seems that while for many years it was extremely difficult getting licenses in the U.S., this now seems to be a more feasible path. I personally believe that the neobanking landscape in the US is really ripe for disruption. The difference here is that in the US there's still significant interchange fees to be gathered, hence many neobanks focused on this part. They didn't focus more on the overall building a balance sheet part. Outcome is that the neobanks in the US have not been as successful as they have been globally. So the market is still, as I said, ripe for disruption and for new challengers. Obviously, Revolut has been in the country for a while. I think it hasn't been as growing as fast as it has grown in other parts of the world, partially because of the banking license topic. But it's such a huge market. It has such a big potential. I'm not surprised that Revolut is pushing this market here. Now, your question was around, are the prospects now better because of the UK license? Again, my humble opinion is probably yes, but every regulator will take their own decisions. Obviously, a bank, again, with 50 billion clients plus with licenses in many different countries, should have a better chance of getting the license. But again, let's wait and see what comes out. Assuming they will get the license, and assuming they will bring some of their core functionalities into the US market, I'm quite optimistic for Revolut that there is a lot of ground to be taken. It's still a pretty living in the US, it's still a market where you see a branch at every corner. Branches are actually growing in some parts. It's still some parts of the transactions. I mean, don't try to pay your rent in the US at some stage. Sometimes you still have to walk into a branch, get a check, walk into another branch, leave the check. These type of things still happen on this side of the pond. So yes, there are things to be disrupted.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. That's definitely a very different landscape to the one in the UK and the rest of Europe. Looking forward, not only to the US, but more generally in the neobanking landscape, if this convergence continues to take place between neobanks and high street banks, or if they converge more than perhaps we're seeing right now, is there a sort of new wave of competitor banks that will come into being that you think can differentiate themselves? Or are we in a sort of restabilization period following, as you say, what was quite a major upheaval with this initial wave of neobanks that offered something new?
I think it's the latter. I don't see a new wave of new players coming in without a license. It's just a natural trajectory of neobanks then moving into having a license and being a little bit more like traditional banks. Because again, the thing that is different about neobanks is not necessarily the type of products they play. Yes, there's a bit of an eSIM and there's Revolut has obviously some additional products. Others like Nubank have additional products as well. At the core, it's still a bank. At the core, it's better to have a license than not to have a license. And again, as I said earlier, I don't think it'll come with more regulatory scrutiny. It'll come with more complexity for sure. But I don't think it's going to change the DNA. And it's extremely difficult of starting from scratch now and launching something new and trying to catch up, because whenever you launch something new, you have to have significant white space to disrupt the markets. And that white space I don't see at the moment. I still see an opportunity for traditional banks launching their speedboats, because what I mentioned before is acquisition happens in the digital channels with digital brands. Most of the traditional brands, banks have troubles of playing at par with the neobanks in the acquisition game. So if you don't acquire new customers down the road, you will have an eroding market share, eroding revenues. It's not going to come overnight, but we're big fans of sort of having a multiple brand approach for traditional banks. I think that's what's going to happen. Someone in a garage launching the next thing around neobanking and then maybe going into tokenization, stable coins, whatever it is, I think that train has left the station.
I think that about wraps up our discussion on Revolut's UK banking license. We've explored why the company went through such a lengthy process despite already being able to lend, what this means for its flexibility, costs, and competitive position, and how it fits into the broader neobank landscape, both in the UK and internationally. One thing that stands out is that the news highlights the balance neobanks must strike between growth, regulatory compliance, and customer trust. Looking ahead, it also raises questions about the next evolution of banking, whether incumbents will be able to keep up with the rapid expansion of neobanks, and how global market shares and neobank revenue streams will look when the dust settles. Thank you, Christoph, for sharing your insights, and thank you for listening. For FS Tech, I'm Isaac Hansen, and we'll see you next time.
This is the FS Tech Podcast.